Hello, welcome to an extra edition of the SITREP podcast from BFBS. From testing whether we're ready for war to asking whether forces families get the support they need, the Commons Defence Committee plays an important role in overseeing everything that makes up our defence. The committee is reformed from scratch after each general election, and so it has a new set of members, including a new chairman. Tan Desi has been the Labour MP for Slough since 2017. Before politics, he ran his own construction company after studying maths and management science at Oxford. So what will he bring to the job? Why did he want it? And what are his priorities as we face our greatest defence threats since World War II? Tan Desi, really great to speak to you. Welcome to SITREP. Just first of all, why did you want to lead the Commons Defence Committee in this Parliament?
Okay, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to have this discussion with yourself. Well, look, defence is, for me, it's not a constituency interest per se. There aren't any huge military bases, as you may have ascertained in Slough. It was more because of a keen personal family interest, in the sense that my great-grandfather lost a leg fighting in the First World War, my grandmother's brother and other family members fought in the Second World War. So I've always had a very, very keen interest in defence. I previously served on the Defence Committee in 2020. Unfortunately, then I had to stand down from that when I got invited by Keir Starmer to be on his front bench. So I became the Shadow Railways Minister. And unfortunately, then I had to step down, not just from the Defence Select Committee, but also as a delegate of the NATO Parliamentary Assembly. But after the recent election, it became apparent there was the chance to stand for the chair of the Defence Committee, and hence why I put my name forward along with others. And I'm very, very grateful and very honoured that my fellow MPs have elected me as their chair.
Along with others, you say, and you beat a very experienced hand of the committee, Derek Twigg. What do you believe you bring to this job?
Well, look, there are lots of experienced individuals, lots of people with a great deal of knowledge who wanted to be chair, and I think they are all eminently capable. Former defence ministers, individuals who had served previously on the committee. But now I want to make sure that as a committee, we are working on a strong cross-party basis. It is not a political committee in the sense that we have the ability, if we work collectively, to not just support the government in their primary duty to keep our country safe, but also to scrutinise various aspects of their work to ensure that their feet are being held to the fire, but to ensure that our country is indeed safe.
And what do you bring to that mission?
Well, look, as far as myself, I have now been a Member of Parliament for well over 7 years. I was first elected in June 2017. Prior to that, I'd served as a councillor as well. Councils, as you know, are responsible for implementing the Armed Forces Covenant, which is invaluable because in defence, there is a lot to do with veterans, with people on the ground. It's about our serving brave servicemen and women, but also our veterans and with stakeholders. And I would like to think that the experience that I have gained, having served as a UK delegate on the NATO Parliamentary Assembly, as well as on previous select committees like defence, as well as having scrutinised the government during my role as a shadow minister for railways or as a shadow treasury minister or as the shadow business and trade minister, all of those things should enhance my input to our defence committee.
And as the chairman of the Commons Defence Committee, what do you want to achieve for the UK's servicemen and women?
Look, I want to ensure that all of them are able to serve with dignity and that we are able to bestow upon them the respect that they deserve. So it is a case that everybody is not just they're just happy, but also proud to be serving And I know that we've got issues with recruitment and retention. Whenever I've visited military bases, so over the last few years, while I've been serving as an MP, I was also engaged in what's called the Armed Forces Parliamentary Scheme. So for several years, I ended up visiting UK and military bases abroad as well, talking to our servicemen and women and to veterans and others in the defence industry to see what's going right, what's not going well. But that Armed Forces Parliamentary Scheme, by the way, we managed to engage for 1 year. It was with the British Army, another year with the Royal Navy, and then also with the Royal Air Force. And then I also thereafter graduated. So I'm a graduate from the Royal College of Defence Studies, wherein we looked at strategic studies, so international aspects, where we had approximately about 100 military leaders, senior military leaders from across the world. And that, by the way, is part of our soft power. I think that the work of the Royal College of Defence Studies is incredibly important because we provide a platform for others to congregate, and that enables us to network with those military leaders, some of whom will end up leading the militaries in their respective nations.
And you have two people-focused inquiries currently on women in defence and service accommodation. Briefly, what do you hope they can achieve?
Well, look, when the new committee was elected, so there's 11 of us who are now newly elected onto that committee, we wanted to make sure that the work of the previous committee was not ignored. So we will now be completing the inquiries on artificial intelligence, on the grey zone, also on service accommodation. You mentioned about women in the armed forces, some of the deplorable behaviour from certain elements within our armed forces. It was shocking. And some of us have raised those issues in the House. What we will be ensuring is that on an annual basis, we look into the state of how our service women are serving, the behavior, whether there are behavioral or cultural changes, which the Secretary of State and the Ministry of Defence have said to us that's exactly what they will ensure, is that cultural change. And I want to commend Sarah Atherton and the sub-inquiry that initially started off this work. And thereafter, I think for us, it's a case of, on an annual basis, we want to make sure that it's not just an inquiry or a piece of work that just gathers dust on some shelf here in Parliament, that we look into that on a regular annual basis, because it's important that some of those measures are implemented and that they're seen through, and that we have that regular liaison with individuals where they feel that they can also write to us, and if need be, we will then delve further into the details.
And what do you hope to achieve for defence as a whole?
Look, for defence as a whole, the primary duty of any government is to keep our country safe. So national security is incredibly important. I want to make sure that we are supportive of government as and where that is required. But ultimately, our primary role is to scrutinise. That is what we will be doing on a constant basis. I'm very, very grateful to the Secretary of State who accepted our request when I wrote to him that we wanted to have a public evidence session with him at the earliest opportunity. So we had 2 hours of questioning with him, and we will now be holding a further session with the Permanent Secretary and looking into the Strategic Defence Review. That is also a landmark moment for our nation's defence. So I've had a private meeting with Lord Robertson, but now we will be holding next month a public evidence session with him. And thereafter, there will be further sessions to ensure that the defence and national security of our country is in safe hands.
And that session with the Defence Secretary, John Healey, came less than 24 hours after he'd announced the axing of 5 ships, 31 helicopters and more than 40 drones. What's your view of those cuts?
Look, as I said on the floor of the House when the statement was made, that in an overall sense, I welcome the Secretary of State's statement, because we need to transition. We need to retire some of the older platforms. Many of those haven't effectively been in use. For example, if there is a vessel just docked rather than being out at sea, that isn't really as effective to our nation's defense. So we need to make sure that we are transitioning to newer technology, newer platforms. And what I also wanted to ascertain from the Secretary of State is, will some of that old kit be sold to our allies, and what will be given to our friends in Ukraine who are fighting for their very survival?
And while some decisions are being announced months before the defence review is completed, the big one on money won't come until some time after. I just want to play some of your exchange with the Defence Secretary on that.
For example, the government created a military strategic headquarters. It also recruited a national armaments director without waiting for the Strategic Defence Review, the SDR, to be implemented. But it continues to delay on that 2.5% of GDP. So why that anomaly?
I see no anomaly. First of all, we set out the commitment to establishing a path to 2.5%, but we're not waiting till then. You mentioned the budget the Chancellor delivered on the 30th of October. You will have noted, unlike many other departments, there was a substantial increase in next year's budget for defence, 2.9 billion extra just next year. So a demonstration that we recognise as a government, the first duty of a government is to keep this country safe, and that is what we will are determined to do.
And Tanya, he's still not given the definitive date. Some people will hear this and wonder if it's a bit of political theatre between the two of you, or do you have genuine concerns that the government is stalling on putting more money into defence?
Well, look, as I've said to the Secretary of State prior to that evidence session, I've said that out publicly on the floor of the House, that I appreciate the work of the Secretary of State. I know he gets the importance of this issue. In an increasingly dangerous and volatile world, we've got now a conflict within our continent. So in Europe, we've now got thousands of North Korean troops on European soil. So we need to be cognizant that there are conflicts raging in the Middle East, in the Sahel region. We've got tensions in the Indo-Pacific. Given that context, we need to move swiftly towards better outcomes and to ensure that decisions are taken in a more timely manner. So that is why I pressed him on the floor of the House as to what discussions has he had with others around the cabinet table. Do they understand the gravity of it? Has he had discussions with the Chancellor and Treasury officials? Because often the blockages could be in Treasury, where there are competing demands, very legitimate competing demands, whether it's in terms of our nation's healthcare, social care, education. There are so many competing demands for the Prime Minister and the Chancellor to look at. But we must appreciate that getting to a point where we have clarity and a timetable for reaching 2.5%, which, by the way, is the government's manifesto commitment. So that's something that both I, as a Labour MP, and the Secretary of State both stood on. It's incumbent on us to provide clarity to our allies, to others within the defence community. If we are to bolster our defence industrial base, whether that's the primes, whether that's the SMEs, that can only happen if there's that clarity and a timetable.
And you've chosen to resume the committee's inquiry into defence in the grey zone, as you said,
yes,
which was halted by the election. Just explain briefly what the aims of that inquiry are.
Look, Kate, what we're seeing is more and more attacks, for example, on undersea cables, on cargo planes. There are certain things that are happening in the cyberspace, things happening beneath the threshold whereby states or other nefarious actors can just pretend that it wasn't them. So that is why we need to realise that our British troops aren't out there in an overt or explicit the conflict at present. And a lot of this is actually within the grey zone. So That is why that particular inquiry is incredibly important. We will, I hope, touch wood, very, very soon publish that the findings of that inquiry. And no doubt we will come back to these themes because they are becoming increasingly important. We've seen how it's impacting not just our nation's defense, but our democracy. The levels of disinformation, of misinformation on social media, on the internet, which actually affects our electorate. So if we want to defend our way of life, if we want to defend our democracy, we need to concentrate on what's happening within that grey zone.
And the Deputy Chief of Defence Staff has told you that grey zone or sub-threshold attacks are happening to us now, every day. Do you have a sense of how we are responding, and do you think the response is appropriate?
Well, look, there's a lot of great positive work, a lot of hard work that goes into this, and I'm very, very grateful to everyone who is involved behind the scenes who keeps us all safe. So I want to commend that work, but look, there's always room for improvement. The threats are ever changing. Newer ones are emerging, newer technology. We, as I've just said in an earlier parliamentary debate as well, we've got to be at the cutting edge of technology, at the cutting edge of innovation, not just in terms of military weaponry, but also online. So that is why it's important that we are very much on the ball rather than there certainly can't be any room for complacency.
And attacks can range from disinformation to, as we saw in 2018, a chemical weapon attack with Novichok on British soil. Our responses, at least in public, remain limited to things like sanctions and diplomatic expulsions. Is that enough?
Well, look, diplomacy has a huge part to play in it, but also deterrence. So having suitable deterrence in place and to ensure that we have the technology. So we are harnessing, for example, AI, the full scope of that, and also working not just with companies from across the world, but also our allies, how we may be able to rely on others for certain specialisms, learning from them and from best practice, but then also giving some of our best practice to some of our, whether it's our NATO allies or others across the globe, because I think that's very, very important. And more, Kate, it's becoming about alliances. The government has taken on board its NATO first policy, which I think is very, very apt that they are doing that. NATO is the cornerstone of our defence. But also now, I'm glad that the Prime Minister has committed to GCAP, so the Global Combat Air Programme, in close collaboration with Japan and Italy and perhaps other partners. And whether it's also bolstering the ties with our closest ally in the US, our Five Eyes alliance, there are so many alliances, and those alliances will become crucial for our nation's defence in future.
And in terms of a grey zone attack, where is, in your view, the threshold for an enemy action to require a physical response, not just words and diplomatic blowback?
But that ultimately is a decision for the government. It won't be for the chair of the Defence Committee or indeed any of our other committee members. The government has to take on board what it is seeing at that point in time. Obviously, I can't comment on hypothetical situations, but the government, seeing the situation at that time, they no doubt will have to ensure that there is a befitting response. And as and when any such decisions are taken, no doubt we in Parliament will be scrutinising those decisions.
Western intelligence says three air freight parcel fires in one day in the summer were part of a Russian test run to attack a transatlantic jet. If a jet were to be attacked and brought down that way, should it be treated as an act of war?
Look, it's incredibly important that we treat each threat very, very seriously. And we were shocked, but not surprised, to hear about such activity. And I am sure that at the right time, depending on the gravity of the situation and depending on the extent of what is there, That is when ministers will take the appropriate decision in consultation with the Prime Minister.
And how should we and our NATO allies strike the balance, do you think, between avoiding escalation and not being seen as weak and powerless?
Well, we can never seem weak because otherwise that's how bullies act. So the likes of Putin are not interested in cordial conversation. The only way that you can deal with a bully is to stand up to them. That's something that I've learned, whether it's on a personal level, but I think as on a national level, we need to make sure that we have that safety and security through strength, defense through strength, because if our adversaries know that we are strong, we have the necessary deterrence in place, they are less likely to engage in negative or nefarious activities against us.
And just finally, Tan, we live in an arguably the most dangerous time since World War II. How do you hope to make a difference at this moment in time?
Well, many of us who have been privileged and honoured enough to have been elected onto the Defence Committee. The Defence Committee generally is always one of the most influential and powerful committees in Parliament. But in the current context, its preeminence, its importance has been raised significantly simply because of that volatility and the dangerous world that we now find ourselves in. So we take our job extremely seriously. I take my role very, very seriously, because I know that if we are complacent, that means that others may not be doing the job that they're doing as effectively or as efficiently as they can, which will damage our national interests.
Tan Desi, great to speak to you. Thank you so much for spending time with us on SITREP.
Thank you, Kate.